And welcome to We Live Here Authentico, a collaboration with Authentico Podcast and St. Louis Public Radio. My name is Gabriela Ramirez Arellano, your co-host, talking to Hispanic, Latino, Latinx, Latine business owners and professionals.
And I am Alejandro Santiago. No matter how you identify, no matter how successful you are, or how much money or power you have, we have more in common than we know sometimes. And more than likely, we are still trying to figure it out. In a previous episode, you heard Junior Lara talk about why he and Gabriela started Authentico.
We realized, hey, we don't have to all struggle as much. No, it doesn't have to happen. That doesn't have to be a rite of passage. We could absolutely make it better for the next generation to be more authentic, to be more of themselves.
Junior and I wanted to uplift the stories of Latinos in St. Louis and share lessons learned to help us all better handle the challenges and learn from them and each other.
Today's guest, Susan Sierra, shares her story and the journey that has led her to find her career path and to quite literally change St. Louis as we know it. Through her work at the St. Louis Mosaic Project, Susan is working to transform St. Louis into the fastest growing metropolitan area for immigrants by 2025, as well as promoting regional prosperity through immigration and innovation. Her own story fuels her passion to get that done.
When I was starting my discovery journey, let's put it that way, in terms of who am I, and I went to a doctor once and he said, "What is your purpose?" And I had no idea how to answer that question. I'm like, "I don't know. I'm a wife." Like, I really had no idea. And so I can answer that a little bit better now. My parents are from Colombia, South America. My dad studied medicine in Mexico, and he and my mom wanted to come to the U.S. for him to practice medicine. And so back then, it was so much easier, you know, to do that. And many hospitals wanted foreign doctors. So they just kind of blanketed the U.S. with resumes. And there was a clinic in Chattanooga, Tennessee that said they wanted to interview him. So that's where they started, was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and that's where my siblings and I were born. So fast forward, we then moved to a small town in Wisconsin called La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is really on the border of Minnesota. And that's really where I grew up. So, you know, as I was coming on the show and I was thinking about like my identity and who am I, and we're going to be talking about Latinidad and what does it mean to us? And, you know, part of my story is this identity crisis, because I grew up in this very, you know, I like to call it a lily white community, small town in Wisconsin. And we were, you know, kind of immediately pegged as different because of my parents. You know, they had heavy accents and kids would make fun of them. And so I kind of had a lot of shame, which hurts me today to say that. But I was like embarrassed by my parents' accent. And I just remember going to the grocery store and my mother would be like at the checkout, you know, questioning why everything costs so much. And like in her broken English, and I was mortified, like, "Can we just please get out of here?" You know? And, you know, and my friends would make fun of my parents' accents. And, you know, there was a little bit of that sort of meanness to it. And my parents had a group of foreign-born friends because they gravitated toward the foreign-born doctor community. And we would go to Colombia every year at the holidays. And so I would go there and I would feel out of place. Because, I mean, when I was little, it was, you know, it was easier. But as I got older, you know, I felt very self-conscious about speaking Spanish. I would go there and I was the gringa. And so it was like, where do I fit in?
Suzanne was asking herself some of the same questions that many of us get stuck at. Who am I? Where do I fit in?
I wish the answers were easier, Gabby, but I think it's really clear-cut, especially because our identity is so important to us, yet it is often a lifelong journey that is influenced by many things like gender, profession, personality, religion, where we live, the culture we are brought up in, and as our understanding of ourselves evolves, we grow, learn, and experience new things.
I always got the question of, what are you? I had, you know, are you Hawaiian? Are you Asian? In the summer, I would get really tan, and I lived in Chicago after I graduated from college, and you know, some people thought I was mulatto, which I don't even know if that's a term we use anymore. And then I would say, well, you know, I'm Colombian. And then it would be one of these, oh, that's why you have that olive skin, you know, or I would get, no, you're not, but you're not really Latina. You're not really, you know. And so it was always like, you know, I hear the term code switch, you know, and I was like, is that what I was doing back then? I don't even know. But I guess I grew up wondering, where did I fit in? You know, really, where did I fit in? So I will say that I, you know, I kind of like denied that part of my heritage. I feel like until I moved to St. Louis, I mean, it's interesting, but coming to St. Louis and being here, and of course the work that I do, like, has really, really brought me back to my roots in a way that I'm so happy with. I mean, I still suffer a little bit from that sort of identity, you know, and a lot of it is like, I don't look, quote unquote, I don't look Latina. I don't sound Latina, you know, and again, when I go to Colombia, it's like, oh, but you're so gringa, you know, and it's like, oh, it's frustrating. But yeah, I love, you know, the work that I do with you guys and the work that I do just with the St. Louis Mosaic Project and in the community, because I have that lived experience of that immigrant story and the feeling, that feeling other, you know, I understand that like in a different way, I think, than some people. And so I hope that I bring that compassion and that sort of empathy to the table when I do the work I do.
Suzanne met a guy who was moving to St. Louis. They both packed their bags and made the move. Even though the relationship did not work out, she decided to stay here in St. Louis. She didn't have family or friends here and eventually started looking for a job in Hispanic marketing. She wanted to use her own experiences, knowledge of the community, and language.
Suzanne received her journalism degree from the University of Wisconsin. She was anxious to start in public relations at one of two companies who were a good fit for Hispanic marketing then, Fleischmann Hillard and Anheuser-Busch. However, she wasn't having any luck. During that time, driving around in a little Jetta, Suzanne started networking and meeting with anyone she could connect with. Eventually, all that effort landed her dream job at Fleischmann Hillard. It was then that Suzanne really felt that she had arrived.
5 years later, she made the move to Anheuser-Busch to do corporate relations and spent time working with national nonprofit organizations in California, Miami, New York, and Chicago.
Yeah, and so from there, I did some government affairs work for a while at Anheuser-Busch and then crisis communication. So it was really for a PR person, it was sort of like it was like my dream job. I mean, I got amazing experience at both places. I learned so much. I learned from so many amazing people. And then I, so I was there for a total of 15 years at Anheuser-Busch. And then I left there when InBev came in and you know, everybody was making changes. And I went out on my own for 10 years. I had my own PR business. And then in that time, I ran for city council of my municipality, and I went through the Focus Leadership Program. And all of those moves sort of started me kind of zeroing in on what it was I wanted to do and where was my passion. And it became about the community, and it became about making a difference and sort of like that advocacy piece. And I remember I finished the Focus Leadership Program, and it was the last weekend. And they have you stand up and say, well, what do you hope to do after this 9-month program? Like, what do you want to do with what you've learned? Because it's about, you know, leadership. And I remember standing up and saying, I want to be an advocate for the Hispanic community. And I had no idea what that meant. You know, I believe you like put stuff out into the universe and that's how you start to manifest your destiny, reality, your dreams. And I was cognizant of saying it and also aware that I didn't have any idea what that would look like. Like, I have no idea. And again, everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. And then 2 weeks later, somebody said, you need to meet Betsy Cohen, who works with folk with the St. Louis Mosaic Project. And then they sent me a job description about a Latino outreach consultant. And I called Betsy and I'm like, this is the easiest cover letter I've ever written. Like, this is my job. And I was hired. And that was really sort of what launched me into the local Latino community.
As the Hispanic community continues to grow, not only in St. Louis, but across the nation, we also wanted to know if Hispanic marketing has changed from the early 90s when she first started.
I feel like, has it changed? I don't know. So when I was like, you know, coming up in my career, so in the early 90s, again, it was a lot about, you know, ads and marketing had to have like the representation and I felt, how do I say it? It was like, do you have to have everything in Spanish? Should it be bilingual? Are the people that you're featuring, you know, are they Latino? I mean, so it's complicated. I mean, I feel like we've evolved, but I also feel like we haven't, if that makes sense. There's still a lot of educating to do. And again, in St. Louis, because we have a small, you know, population, I mean, it's growing, right? And so if I can just put a shameless plug in for this campaign, the STL Para Ti campaign that we have launched, you know, the whole purpose of it is to encourage Latinos living in other cities to consider coming to St. Louis. And so to your question, like we struggled with, do we do the campaign in Spanish? Do we do it in English? I mean, we had a limited budget. So it's in English, but we have Spanish and English ads. But then it's complicated. Marketing to Hispanics, I think, is a little bit complicated because not everybody speaks Spanish. And then what are the vehicles you're using to reach them? So while I've always identified as, you know, Latina writer, I know that I didn't consume my information from Spanish language media. And so it's complicated, I think.
It's definitely complicated. And there are all kinds of Spanish. There are 21 different countries that state that their official language is Spanish. So you can imagine that one word has many different translations, depending on the country that the people come from.
While there is still much to be done in the region, there are also some successes.
Successes? I mean, I would say, you know, the Hispanic Chamber has become a real go-to resource for businesses, for the community as well. Why is it important to do it? Yeah, because you need to meet them where they are. You need to, I think, you know, again, we're talking about identity. It's important to, and respect, to say to them, you know, to say to our community, you know, we see what's important to you. We understand that you may not, again, get information the same way. We need to focus on a grassroots approach to make sure that they're accessing the information. It's about accessing the information in a way that they access their information. And, you know, otherwise, what happens is that we put out information, you know, and this was threatening to happen, that we had this, you know, we wanted to know how many foreign-born businesses had applied. Well, it was, you know, it's almost not fair to say, well, this was our metric and we didn't meet it. But how hard did we actually try to get the information to them in their communities and through the grassroots networks that they rely on for information? It's a necessity. Otherwise, we lose people. I mean, that's why language access is important. You know, that's why the foreign-born people coming into the community, if we want them to know how to access services or ride the bus or whatever, if we're not giving them that information in their native language, they're not going to know how to do it. And then we're going to say they don't want to be part of us, or they, you know, or look, they don't need the services. Well, how do they need this? No, they need the services. They don't need even know that they're available.
Suzanne started working at the St. Louis Mosaic Project, which is part of the region's economic development agency, and so began her work in the Latino community here in St. Louis.
Don't go away. There are so many learning experiences we still have to unpack. When we come back, Suzanne will share what she does in her role at the St. Louis Mosaic Project and how it helps the economy and St. Louis.
From St. Louis Public Radio
and PRX,
this is
We Live Here
Auténtico. Suzanne started working at the St. Louis Mosaic Project, a regional initiative within the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership and the World Trade Center St. Louis, supporting regional prosperity through immigration and innovation.
Before I met Suzanne, I found the Mosaic Project through Betsy Cohen, its executive director. I had just moved to St. Louis and started working at the Hispanic Chamber, and on a whim, I wrote to some of my friends in Detroit, asking if they knew anyone in St. Louis that I should connect with. I remember Steve Tobachman saying I had to meet Betsy and made an introduction. Steve had served as the elected representative from Michigan's 12th State House District in Detroit and was the executive director of Global Detroit, a regional economic and community development organization advancing immigrant-inclusive strategies to drive growth, revitalization, and broadly shared prosperity of Detroit and Southeast Michigan. I met him when I was working on the now Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib's campaign, and later when he brought the Prosperous Detroit program to Southwest Detroit. I worked closely with the team to design and localize the Spanish curriculum, and then went on to train and support small business owners in Spanish and English.
Wow, it's always fascinating learning the intricate ways in which life works. It is also great to hear that there is collaboration between St. Louis and Detroit. It sounds like we're working on similar initiatives, Gabby.
Definitely, Alejandro. And Suzanne is right there in the middle of it all.
I am the senior program manager at the St. Louis Mosaic Project, which is part of the region's economic development agency. And the whole goal of Mosaic, our two goals, are to transform St. Louis into the fastest growing major metropolitan area for immigration by 2025 and to add 25,000 new foreign born to the region. And so those are really aspirational goals. I mean, the whole reason that Mosaic was established is because the civic leaders, the leaders of St. Louis, realized that we needed to do something to strengthen our economy. And there was research about the impact of immigration on our peer cities and how immigration was really fueling the economies. And Mosaic was started as an entity to specifically focus on marketing the region as being welcoming to the foreign-born. And so, you know, that's what we do. So I get to go and tell the story on, you know, radio shows and talk to companies and talk to schools and universities and individuals about, A, we have a growing, you know, hopefully continuing to grow foreign-born population. B, this is why it helps the economy, but this is why it helps St. Louis. This is why it helps our neighborhoods. This is why it helps our schools and our companies. I get to talk about how that sort of diversity and the international global thinking that people bring who aren't from St. Louis or even from this country, how that enriches all of us. I mean, we talk about diversity, and I like to talk about the diversity of the diversity. You know, it's not just black and white or brown. It's truly a mosaic of different people. And I just think that's just so, you know, that's so beautiful. And so I love, I mean, the Latino community is obviously a big part of that. And particularly, you know, when you look at the ethnic groups that are fueling the growth, a lot of it is Latino and Asian. You know, but it's just, it's the whole mosaic of the international community. And so because I'm out there talking about that, that is when I get to share my story so that people can understand, because it's always like, well, who are you to be doing this work? And again, because I don't look at, you know, somebody, nobody's going to look at me immediately and say, oh, you're the daughter of an immigrant. Oh, you're Latina. Oh, you're whatever. They don't see it. So sometimes I feel like I have to over-explain a little bit, like, yes, 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 I belong here. But to be able to say to them, you know, my parents didn't speak English very well when they came here. And my mom still speaks with a thick accent. And, you know, this was my experience growing up in a bilingual, bicultural home. And I traveled to Colombia and I still have a lot of family there. Like, then it sort of, it kind of gives you, or gives me, like, that credibility. And I do remember meeting with someone who Betsy, you know, wanted me to meet this person to be sure that they were okay with me taking on this role because I was going to be working closely with them. And the person said, where have you been? I haven't seen you in the community. And I remember feeling defensive and, you know, I'm like, well, he's right. Like, do I, so, you know, the first of that imposter syndrome, like, do I deserve to have this job? Can I do it? I'm not Latina enough to do this job, you know, but, you know, I just very honestly answered, well, I've been working full time and, you know, I had my own business and I've always wanted to give back to the community. And so this is, I think, my first step in doing that. And that was, 6 years ago or something.
Suzanne touched on many layers. One, the perception of what and how a Latino looks like. And two, colorism. Research from the Pew Research Center says that a majority of Hispanic adults, 62%, say having a darker skin color hurts Hispanics' ability to get ahead in the United States, today at least a little. A similar share, 59%, say having a lighter skin color helps Hispanics get ahead. And 57% say skin color shapes their daily life experience a lot or some, with about half saying discrimination based on race or skin color is, quote, a very big problem in the U.S. today. This overlaps with America's understanding and perception of the Hispanic community. There's not just one image of what being Latino looks like. It means and is so many identities. It's different races, different languages, different nationalities, religions, and skin tones. We need to continue educating and highlighting the diversity within the Hispanic Latino community.
Right. And it's interesting because in the work that I do, I work with many of the employee resource groups at companies, ERGs. And I was presenting to a large group and it was the Mi Gente group at a company. So it was all the Latino employees. And I was telling my story. And somebody said in the comments, gosh, you know, that's a very similar to my experience. And that's music to my ears, you know, because again, it goes back to the imposter syndrome of, and also it's also my own hang up of being terminally unique. You know, like, of course, I'm not the only person who has this experience. And it helps me to hear other people that feel the same way. Because then again, then I don't feel so alone. And that's why, you know, it goes back. Like, I love that my chosen profession was as a communicator, because really growing up, I felt like I didn't have much of a voice. I mean, I grew up in a household where, you know, when my dad was angry, you know, it didn't matter what my side of the story was. Like, I couldn't really talk about that. I love that I am in a position to help people find their voice and tell their story. You know, I feel like I'm doing like what I'm supposed to be doing with being welcoming and creating this environment of being welcoming to people that are different. And I'm only one person. And that's the part that's frustrating is like, we need to have more people doing this work, talking about the importance of a diverse community. And I mean, like your show, I just love that you guys are doing this show. It's so awesome. You know, just continue to go out there and look for partners, look for collaborators, look for ways to spread the word about about being welcoming and embracing change and not being, you know, afraid of what you think it might mean.
I'm personally grateful for the St. Louis Mosaic Project and the support that Betsy and the team have given me in my professional and personal journey. So if you haven't had a chance to check out the St. Louis Mosaic Project, go to their website and there you will see the various programs such as the International Spouses Group that supports and connects immigrant women. There are also opportunities and resources for ambassador companies, professional connectors, hiring international talent, and so much more.
When we come back, Suzanne talks about embracing who she is and how her Latinidad is passed on to her family.
I'd say I'm in the middle of the journey. And again, I think my work has been a big part of allowing me to really embrace the identity crisis that I've had in a way, because again, to be able to come on this show and talk about it, you know, I'm such a big believer in sharing your story, you know, and my story is, I mean, I have a lot of other things that are part of my story that I think people would be very surprised about. But when I share those parts of it, there's never a time when a person doesn't say, wow, you know, I've been through that, or I know somebody who's gone through that, or, you know, and it's like that just leads to that deeper connection of getting to know a person. Like, I don't want to know a person superficially, you know, and obviously you can't know everybody really deeply, but I am about forging, like, you know, authentic connections and relationships. And so I would say, I'm still in the process of that journey. I have two boys who are so proud of their Colombian heritage. And it just brings, I get goosebumps just talking about it. They love it. I mean, they love it. They embrace it. My younger son, he just loves everything about it. The culture, the food, the music. He likes to tell people that he's Colombian. He was cute. He would cringe if I used the word cute, but it is. I was helping him with like his bio or something for a project. And he wrote at the bottom, hopes to return soon to Colombia, where his mom's family's from. And I was just like, oh my God, I love that. You know, and my older son also. And so they really embrace it. I mean, they don't speak Spanish, which, you know, I get a lot of flack from my mom, but I tried. I mean, I married, you know, a St. Louis American man. So I tried. Like, I had the Spanish music, I had the Spanish books, but it's really hard to maintain that. When it's just you, and sadly we didn't have an immersion school at the time, you know, but so that's been my like regret with them is not that they don't speak Spanish, but they love it. And I love that they love it. That just, it makes my heart happy.
And for many Latinos, that is another layer. I'm not speaking Spanish, and am I still enough? Am I still part of the group?
It definitely is, Alejandro. And sometimes we are hard on each other about that too.
I know you were especially grateful, Gabby, with Suzanne's Spanish for all the support she was able to provide during the pandemic, specifically to Spanish-speaking business owners when the economic development agencies came together to issue small business grants, as well as advocating for language access, which she continues to do now.
You know, what I've realized is it just takes constantly bringing up the issues, as you know, like we have to always be reminding people about the importance of language access, about the importance of inclusion, and about, you know, about the importance and the definitions of diversity and what does that mean and how does that look and how can we in our own individual ways bring that about. Like we have to constantly be talking about it.
Collaboration seems to be a big part of Suzanne's work and what St. Louis needs to do for economic prosperity and to support our communities.
Sharing power and resources. Let's listen in now as Suzanne shares some of her favorite St. Louis spots and what living Autentica means for her.
I would say St. Louis spots. I mean, you can't really beat Forest Park for everything that it has to offer. The museums and just the vastness of the green space. And, and then I love like South Grand and all of the eclectic and ethnic restaurants there. And I love Cherokee Street and, a lot of the sort of the tourist attractions, the zoo. I also love all of the different neighborhoods in St. Louis, and they all have their own personality. And, I'm proud to live here. I think we have so much to offer. It's accessible, good cost of living, growing diversity. Living autentica to me means not being afraid. Working through your fear, facing your fear, and just not being afraid, to embrace who you are and to embrace your story and to share your story. Because I think a lot of us live afraid, and I just always want to be that welcoming person that extends a hand. I'm a very like compassionate, huggy person. Like, I want you to feel like I'm here for you.
Stacker compiled a list of countries most immigrants to St. Louis come from. Using data from the U.S. Census Bureau, the top five countries were India, Mexico, China, Bosnia, and Vietnam. And having immigrants like ourselves in the region encourages innovation in business, music, art, literature, dance, food, and so many other things, all while realizing a greater understanding of and respect for different cultures, religions, and ideas.
Yes, and according to New American Economy, in 2019, immigrants in the St. Louis metro area made up 4.7% of the population. We spend $4.2 billion, pay $1.7 billion in taxes, and we are 31.2% more likely to be entrepreneurs than U.S.-born residents. Immigrants in the St. Louis area and nationwide have long played an important role in building the wealth of our country and have helped strengthen the labor force, with almost 85% of immigrants having at least a high school degree. I am so glad Suzanne and the Mosaic Project are working to attract more foreign-born to the region, and so happy to have Suzanne join us today.
Thank you, guys. Thanks to the station for having you do this amazing show. I can't wait to catch up on my listening and learn about all these people, that some of whom I've never known about, and some of who I know by name, but I don't know their story, So I'm excited about it. I'm excited for St. Louis.
We Live Here is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Find out more about our guests, get show notes and more information, and of course, check out our previous episodes at welivehere.show. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.